etc. We spent a lot of time with Rupa Goswami, and he's the author, Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipino Sadharma Sangsthapako. Along with the other Goswamis, they studied all the revealed scriptures and gathered the essence of all the revealed scriptures and presented them very succinctly. So this is the amrita, the nectar of upadesh, of the instructions in devotional service. Upadesha amrita, the nectar of instruction in the matters of devotional service. So, we discussed yesterday how these urges can be checked, or vishaheta, this word here, vishaheta, tolerated, or not enter, not be moved by them, be pushed by them, impelled into action by the reactions of our past karmas and our past association with the modes of nature. Not be pushed by the mind. What a relief. I mean, it's not that you don't have a mind. It's not like you have lobotomy. You're just not pushed by the mind. Rather the other way. The mind is directed by spiritual intelligence. Very, very wonderful position. It's the position of pure devotional service. So, the next two verses are going to describe that six things that destroy devotional service and six things that enhance devotional service. But this is a very important standard. So there's a nice thing that we should all do, and that's give credit where credit is due. Most of what's here is the work of a disciple, Prema Tarangani, who taught Nectar of Instruction, part of it, and Sri Isha Upanishad, and she very kindly loaned these presentations to me, and I'm just showing them to you. But explaining them. So, questions that sometimes arise with regard to the tongue. When is it all right to eat in the homes of life members who invite us? I mean, this is specifically relevant to when Srila Prabhupada first went to India. From America, he took a number of disciples back to India, and there was a standard, because Prabhupada traveled all over and accepted 3 to 4 invitations daily in people's homes to visit their homes and give his association, and they became in turn life members. So here was the standard that Prabhupada gave to those who were receiving invitations. There was a series of questions they were to ask. First question was, thank you for the invitation. May I ask, are you vegetarian? And do you maintain that standard in your home? And if the answer was, no, we're not vegetarian, then Prabhupada would say, the devotee was instructed to say, we can come if you provide just milk and fruit. And if they were vegetarian, then the next question was, can you cook without onions and garlic? And that would have different answers. But if the answer was, yes, we can cook without onions and garlic, then the third question is, very nice, would it be all right then we come to, when it's time for the meal, we'll show you how to make the offering. You prepare, and we'll make the offering. We'll show you how to make offerings to Krishna in your home. And then Prabhupada would accept the invitation. That was the training. So that's Prabhupada as a sannyasi and your householders, and there's all these social concerns about people that invite you to come to their home and so on. Yes? Yes, Maharaj. Lots of social concerns. Still, to follow this imperative instruction that Rupa Goswami is giving, and all of the other things that we said yesterday, without following them, you can't be situated properly in devotional service. We must follow. So some similar thing you can do when you receive an invitation. Be as cordial can be, but we're strict. Mr. So-and-so. That's, you know, whoever. Vishnu Das. He's just like that. He that's his thing. And I don't want to spend all my time on these questions, but it gets touchy sometimes when you're in social dealings. How do you work your way through that? Commonly, in the world today, there's certainly exceptions, but commonly, people are very respectful if you have a discipline that you follow. It's cool. It's politically correct to have a discipline that you follow. And it may not be what everyone else follows, and that's okay. Just that you have a discipline that you follow. I've had teenagers tell me that when they're with their friends and friends order something, and their thing is, I'll just take water, please. And they don't go, hey, you're weird. You know, just, that's her thing. She just water, please. And etc. So, be strict. Don't be a fanatic. But, you know, just, if this is the standard that I maintain, and whatever, however you, depending upon the people, this is the advice of Rupa Goswami that I'm passing on to you. Control the tongue. What you decide to eat. How important is it not to eat food cooked by non-devotees? So, Prabhupada writes in his purport of this first verse, the consciousness of the person who is doing the cooking is transmitted through the process of cooking. So when you eat the food that's cooked by one who's not in pure consciousness or devotional consciousness, their contaminations and distortions and whatever, their consciousness is transmitted to you with each mouthful that you eat. So be very careful. That is to say, don't. That's it. You could say it's softer. Avoid. It's stronger. Don't eat food that's cooked. Even as vegetarian, try your best to avoid eating cooked food. So this fruits and milk or salad and yogurt or something like that, it's not cooked. There's no karma or consciousness being transmitted by that. What about we eat food cooked by machines? Well, there's still the meaning, you know, like processed foods. First of all, it's not healthy, but there's still somebody behind it, behind the machine. Best, if you want to have a best standard, like parents that prepare lunches for their kids to go to school, make your bread at home when you make sandwiches and things that are baked or cooked like that. Do it at home. They have little dough makers, and you put this and that, and next thing you know, you got bread. You know, it's really, they made it very simple. But what you're doing it personally, it takes a little longer, but consciousness-wise, it saves a lot of downstream difficulty in consciousness that's not desirable. Then you're managing problems because of taking shortcuts. Take a little extra time and prepare your own items. Should we eat meals provided on airplanes? Prabhupada speaks on this many occasions, and the answer is no. My standard is, especially in India, it's veg or non-veg. I mean, they have a little flight and they serve a meal. And then another little, they have two segments and they serve another meal. So they come through with their little cart and say, you know, veg or non-veg? And the answer is no, thank you. So, well, I mean, you want vegetarian? No, thank you. You want anything? Some water, please. It's very simple. And if you have a long distance to travel, you take something with you. That's prasadam. And you know who prepared it and that it was offered. And if there's fruit and yogurt and, you know, things like that, fine. I'm just recommending, I'm not like, you know. Here we go. Is it okay to overeat on festival days? That was her question. Not a good idea. Young devotees, we have a few young, you know, new to Krishna consciousness devotees. In the beginning, Prabhupada encouraged. He went like this: eat up to your neck, because you know their senses were so uncontrolled. Control this one just by taking prasadam. But after some time, it's reduced, and don't overeat. The answer to number six is no, because it's not acceptable to offer to Krishna, so we don't eat what's not offered to Krishna. So it's not okay to eat foods that are not offered to Krishna. It's same with number seven. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in a very radical statement, when he sent his sannyasis to go to England to preach, he said, even if you have to help people become Krishna conscious, you can eat meat. It's not like, okay, it's endorsed now. The idea, the understanding I have was, because he was certainly very, very strict, that the most important thing is the preaching. And the strictness of what we do, don't do, is subordinate to the extending of Krishna consciousness to others. Now, this is a question for you to answer. Number eight. You're at a public function, you've been told the cheese is vegetarian. After the meal, you find out, whoops, the cheese had animal rennet. How do you react? What's your attitude? What do you do? Anyone been in that situation like that, something like that? And what do you do? How do you process that? Anyone? Yeah. There was a time when everything was cheese meant animal. And then there was a time when they found synthetic was cheaper and it did the same thing, so they went cheaper. And I'm under the impression, I'm not completely certain of this, but it kind of then went back and forth to, you know, you don't really know. So the rule is, when in doubt, don't. That's the rule. If you don't know, don't. It's like, you know, Ekadasi. Does such and such have grain in it, something that's been prepared? And if the answer is you don't know, then you don't take it. It's simple. Not a big austerity. Just, no thank you. And as you said, if you somehow it happens, then you can deeply regret and just be very, very careful in the future, and when in doubt, you don't. So those are some simple little items of advice. So now we're ready for text 2 of Upadesh Amrita, or Nectar of Instruction. This is a set of six things. The first one is Atyahara, and the meaning of Atyahara. We're only going to cover, by the way, the first three out of the six. So next time we have a class, it's going to be the other three out of the six. Atyahara is overeating or overcollecting, and the word has both meanings, so we'll discuss both meanings. Prayasa is endeavor, and It's the implication is too much endeavor for some worldly thing. And we'll discuss prayasa. Then prajalpa. Everyone knows what that one is. Blah, blah, blah. That's prajalpa. Gramya kata. This idle conversation. Blah, blah, blah. And niyama agraha and niyama agraha. We're going to discuss this one tomorrow. But niyama is rules and regulations. And then there's two ways of reading this. Agraha and agraha. Agraha, as it shows, is too much attachment to the rules and regulations without understanding the purpose behind the rules and regulations. You know, fanaticism. Without even understanding the purpose. And niyama agraha is neglecting the niyamas. So too much or neglect. Too much without understanding, fanatic or neglect. Both are causes of difficulty, thorns in the path of devotional service. Jana sanghas, so associating with worldly minded persons. And lalyam, ardent longing or greed, that's the material kind. Greed. Shadbir bhakti vinashati, these six vinashati, they destroy. They're not just thorns on the path, they destroy. They're potentially bhakti destroyers. So, translation is, one's devotional service is spoiled, vinashati, when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities: eating more than necessary, or collecting more funds than required. Two, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. Three, talking unnecessarily, prajalpa, about mundane subject matters. So those are the three that we're going to discuss this evening. And then tomorrow, niyama agraha, or niyama agraha, we discussed. Rejecting rules and regulations of the scripture and working independently or whimsically, niyama agraha. Or associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And there's some nice instructions for householders in this section, because you have to go to work and you have to mix with people that are worldly. So how do you do that? How do you navigate that territory and without interference in your devotional service? And six, being greedy, lalyam, for mundane achievements. Okay, so here we go. This is a diagram that you saw yesterday. No, you didn't see this one yesterday. This is the first one. Urges up, so of the heart. Urges that are clouding the heart and clear the clouds. Then obstacles. I didn't make the diagram. Healing herbs that cure the creeper of bhakti. Loving exchanges is the next, number four. And respect to different grades of Vaishnavas. This is Kanishna Madhyama and Uttama Adhikari, the topmost stage of devotees. And somehow we got bumped off the screen over there. What does it say? Ah, there we go. Internal respect. So, respecting, internally respecting devotees in different ways. And chanting the holy name with taste. And following the path of the gopis and going to Krishna. The last three are specifically glorifications of Vrindavan and Radhakund within Vrindavan, and the love at the highest stages of bhakti. So that's the path that Upadesha Amrita takes, and we want to move it back again. for this side? This is a chart you, some of those of you that were with us yesterday, you saw it. The steps that lead to the house of bhakti, these urges that need to be controlled, and there's progressive degrees of control and surrender required to accomplish them. So here's a chart you haven't seen. Or did you see this?
Yes,
you did. Yeah, this tolerance comes over here. So, prarabdha karma, karma that's manifested right now, and then that's not yet manifested but soon going to manifest, sprouting. And then there are some that are in the seed stage that haven't yet sprouted. And this is kutam, means sinful tendency. These are discussed in Nectar of Devotion. Karma in these different categories, prarabdha and aprarabdha. And aprarabdha has these three, bijam, kutam, and papam is the sinful activity itself. So the sinful activity brings this unmanifested reaction that induces, there's a tendency to do the same thing again. The tendency brings about a desire, which brings about the action again. And in between is the pushing of the mind. So this, what Rupa Goswami's first verse is discussing this. What do? You're supposed to not yield to those urges. Here's the urge. The urge leads to vikar, a bodily transformation. I summarize this very quickly. Narada's instructions in the fourth canto to King Prachinibari, it discusses exactly this stage. The urge brings about the mind connected with the, if there's anger, anger in the mind, if it's connected to the indriya of the hand, it becomes a fist. The indriya of the leg, it becomes kicking. The indriya of the tongue becomes harsh speech. The mind connected to the indriyas. Bodily transformation. And then within the mind, some decision, like some contemplation decision, then some act. And with the act, there's some impression. With the impression, it's stored. The stored impression, there's some subtle memory / perception, just like we discussed. No, wait a minute. We didn't discuss it yesterday. It's discussed by Narada. Sometimes it happens. In a dream, something comes in your dream that's just, you don't know where that came from. Or sometimes when you're chanting, something comes into your mind, you don't know where that thought came from. Or just in the course of your doing your household chores or whatever it is, and something, a desire, a past remembrance, some feeling, something, it's compared to Narada's instructions, is compared to in the bottom of a pond, there may be some organic matter that's decaying, and some methane or carbon dioxide forms, but it's because it's in the mud, it just comes as a bubble. And when the bubble grows and grows and grows, it eventually just pushes through the mud and rises to the surface of the pond. So like that, stored impressions sometime come to your memory, although you don't know, because it was way back in time. It could even have been a different body, same subtle body, but a different gross body, and it's just a stored impression. It's just hanging around in a subtle impression. And tick, 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 time passes. And it fructifies as a vritti, or a memory, or a perception of something. You have a sense of something. And then you contemplate that something. Hey, what was that? And so forth. And then it leads to an urge, and then it leads to an action. And just the whole, it's a subtle machine. This chart is just showing the subtle machine with different terminology. you know, there's lots of psychology in Vedic wisdom. You know, what's happening with the mind? How does the mind, the subtle machinery of the mind, keep us strapped on to the cycle of birth and death? Here it is. And somewhere along the line, we need to break the cycle. If you want the samsara cycle to terminate, the cycle of birth and death. So the bhakti principle comes here. You know, the urge is there, but you just don't act on it. You tolerate it. And you place your consciousness purposefully, deliberately, on something in relation to Krishna, some service in relation to Krishna, some service in relation to the devotees of Krishna, something other than that thing. Because the other stages are going, you can't go back and redo this one, or you can't go back and redo this one. This is where the cycle breaks. Desires, urges, pushings. You don't yield to it. You take the high ground. Invest in sat and detach yourself from asat. So in this verse, this is describing they're actually sequential. Through bad association, it becomes very easy to just talk jibber-jabber. And from talking and hearing jibber-jabber, then some desires form. And over-collecting, over-eating, endeavoring for those things, and neglecting. This is what happened to Ajamila. Started here, and it went to here. He neglected his brahminical duty. Or the Avanti Brahman is described by Krishna to Uddhava in the 11th canto. The Avanti Brahman has started in good association, in good character, but through bad association, he neglected his brahminical activity. So whatever it is, we want to avoid this one. We want to keep good association, and we want to continue to maintain this one. So if we don't control the six urges, we'll become implicated in these obstacles. So this is the connection between the first text and this one. Text 2. If we don't control the six urges, text 1, we will become implicated in these six obstacles that destroy bhakti. And it starts right here. Prabhupada said, anytime there is a fall down from spiritual life, you can trace it back to this, some bad association somewhere along the line. Because the devotee, when one time in Chaitanya Charitamrita it's described, the Lord Chaitanya was asked to describe the quality of a devotee. How can we tell who is a devotee? What's the character of a devotee? And one time his reply was, asat sangha tyag evaishnavachar. Giving up the association of worldly people. That's the characteristic of a devotee. They're very careful about this. They're careful about their practices and their convictions and staying at the lotus feet of Krishna. But something that can take them away is this one. So we're instructed to be very careful about this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary, writes, for one who neglects to follow these instructions, attaining devotion to Lord Hari is extremely rare. It's possible by Kripa Shakti. The Lord can be very merciful and just bestow His mercy even when it's not properly practicing. So, the scriptural teaching connected with all of this is there are these three primary energies of Krishna. The picture shows it. This is the cover of the first canto Bhagavatam the Prabhupada brought from India, one of the volumes. So the antaranga shakti, that's the internal potency. And that's the bahiranga shakti, that's down here, that's the external energy. And the living entity, that's us, we're in this category, marginal. And we're going to be influenced by either this or this. The external energy or the internal energy. And we make choices all the time, constantly. We're making choices, internal or external. And the qualification of the great soul, Mahatmanastamam Partha, Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. Did you forget? Did you learn that one? No? Okay. You know that one? Mahatma, you know what that word means. Mahatma, great soul. Mahatmanastamam Partha, O Arjuna. Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. Ashrita means shelter. They've taken shelter of the internal potency. The great souls have taken shelter of the internal potency. So there's either one or the other. The marginal potency must take shelter of either the external or the internal. And the choice of avoiding Janasangha and all of these other five, the six, is choosing the internal potency and rejecting the other. And that's the difference between a great soul, a Mahatma, or the opposite, Duratma, one who is unfortunate. In this world, look at this guy. That's an ant that's walking away with some, whatever they are, crackers and cheese. Everyone has to work very hard. The bee is working very hard. The bird is working very hard. The lion is working very hard. And the materialist is working very hard. But one, so we have to work very hard for maintenance in the material sphere because we've forgotten what our true mission is, our true purpose is, and our true shelter is. Therefore, that the tendency for eating more or collecting more than necessary is advised against. We do what is necessary and not extreme, ardent endeavor. This is, those adjectives are characteristic of the mode of passion. We work as we're obliged to act, but not in the mode of passion. So, ahara means either eating or enjoying objects of the senses. And so endeavoring for those sense objects is not advised. Over-endeavoring for those objects. That's an interesting cartoon. So some endeavor necessary, but over-endeavoring is not a good idea. So why do persons sometimes collect more than necessary or eat more than necessary? And that's because of behind there's a pushing or a desire. Kama, the desire for sense enjoyment commonly. Or somebody may make an extreme endeavor for liberation or extreme endeavor for mystic city. But according to the teaching of Chaitanya Charitamrita, bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakale ashanta means the mind becomes disturbed. Ashanta. You're not peaceful if you're driven by those desires. So when you take up the position of devotional service, because that's from the soul platform natural, nishkam, that's the platform of being free from material desire. That's what's being recommended naturally by Rupa Goswami. Here are two verses of Bhagavad Gita that essentially say the same thing. You're probably familiar with these verses. Nahi kaschit shanamapi jatu tishtancha kamakrit. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So the advice is not do nothing, because you have to do something. You can't do nothing, even for a moment. The soul is active and the modes of nature are acting also. So the advice is, one who restrains the senses of action but whose mind dwells on sense objects certainly deludes himself and is called the pretender. That's not adequate. So activity is natural. Performing activity in Krishna consciousness is what's recommended. Here's another Rupa Goswami verse. This one is from Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchate. You've probably heard this term, yukta vairagya. This is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, yukta vairagya. That is, this word means without attachment. Asakti means attachment. And anasakti means without attachment. And without attachment to vishaya. Vishaya means sense enjoyment. Vishaya vinivartante niraharashadehinam. Vishaya is sense enjoyment. Without attachment to being a sense enjoyer, yatarham upayunjataha, nirbanda, Krishna sambandhe. There's no bondage to that activity where things are seen in relation to Krishna and yuktam vairagyam. They're used in service to Krishna. There's no bondage. And yatarham is an interesting word. It means according to suitability. It means each person, each one of us, we're different. We're individuals. So what's suitable for me as a sannyasi may not be suitable for another person, even another sannyasi or another brahmachari household or whoever. But the principle is the same, that is, we should not act for sense gratification, vishaya. The objects are there, and the goal is not give up objects, but the goal is don't interact with those objects in the mood of sense gratification. Here's the translation. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts anything, in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. Nirmanda Krishna Sambandhe. So now the third item is prayasa. Atyahara prayasascha. Whoops, yeah, second one. Prayasa. Workaholics Anonymous. If prayasa is not given up, devotion will never arise. So prayasa means endeavor, but in more specifically, over-endeavor. And more specifically, over-endeavoring for some mundane thing. So we'll explore this a little bit. Is there such a thing as the right kind of prayasa? Can we fix the... And the indication is only devotional service is one's inherent occupation. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur writing. There is no need of prayasa in one's inherent occupation, meaning there's no worldly endeavor. It's a devotional endeavor. Endeavoring in devotion, is that necessary? Yes, but it's a different kind of endeavor. It's a labor of love. And when there's that labor of love, what's the limit to the labor of love? There's no limit. But it's not for the purpose of acquiring something. It's for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. So there's no prayasa. We can do so much devotional service we don't have time for our chanting. That's not good. It's more than not good. I just was hearing Prabhupada saying like 10 times, this is animal. Just, you know, work, 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 and not time for chanting. That's not human life. Then that's over-endeavoring. but that, you know, the endeavor for performing my devotional activity, anyway, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, in the conditional stage, a small amount of prayasa is needed to cultivate devotional service. It's not exactly a endeavor for something mundane, but we do need to make some endeavor in order to get up in the morning. And you have trouble getting up in the morning?
Not
anymore? Fantastic. Okay. And to complete your chanting. And to do the things that are required to do. In the spontaneous stage, no effort is required. It just happens spontaneously. So here are some types of prayasa that Bhaktivinoda Thakur identifies. Jnana prayasa, over-endeavoring for mundane knowledge. Karma prayasa, over-endeavoring for fruitive activity. Ashtanga yoga prayasa, there's a cute illustration. Over-endeavoring for getting siddhis that come from performing mystic yoga. Those are categories of something that you need not do. It's destroyer of bhakti. Too much endeavor in these realms. So, question. How do we distinguish if the endeavor that we're making is for Krishna? Or the endeavor is really a selfish something, and as a result, we're over-endeavoring. Who'd like to answer that one?
That's a good question.
Yeah, what's the good answer? Who'd like to volunteer? Where's Rupa Sanatana? Would you like to volunteer? Okay. Anyone else would like to comment? Yes.
If it is not for Krishna. Even if it is not for Krishna, so even if you endeavor hard, you will not get satisfaction. It gets very momentary. Again, you will be satisfied and again less bad.
Yeah. Anyone else? This is, you know, practicum, Krishna Consciousness 101. How do we apply this?
If you do it for outward recognition.
Sure, that's definitely, that's going to come at the very end of tomorrow's presentation. It's really a telltale. One wants recognition. I want recognition, so I endeavor a lot, so I get recognized for doing whatever it is. Yes?
If we are doing it for Krishna's pleasure, or if we are doing it for ourselves.
So how do we tell the difference? How do we distinguish? Yes?
No.
No, behind you. Go ahead, Suja.
I was thinking like you are doing for Krishna, you don't feel the burden of work.
Yes.
And then you feel like so easy and simple and more satisfaction, happy.
And energized. At the end you're not, oh.
And you don't feel frustration.
Yes. Very good. Very good. So you have to do some introspection and self-honesty is a nice muscle to develop. So you can look inside and see what you see, and then another is you can consult with persons that know you well. And I just had a discussion with someone, and he was joking about how his wife jokes with him about, you know, how he over-endeavors. And she says it in such a way that he appreciates her message. So we can take that from persons close to us if we're not. If it's someone close to you and they're offering you some good advice and you react, that's a sign that it's not for Krishna. And what's not prayasa? This is just a question that was addressed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. what's not in the category of prayasa? Performing those activities that are within the direct realm of our devotional service, carrying out our duties, our standard Krishna conscious activity. That's not in the category of over-endeavoring, nor is it for something mundane. So some endeavor is required, and especially in the beginning stages of devotional service, maybe a little more effort than those that are more advanced may need to make. So that's not something to worry about. That's something that you should place some attention on. The best way to give up that tendency, over-endeavoring for mundane things. Here's a teaching from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha, that verse. One immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. In his purport, Prabhupada writes, when a devotee humbly and without duplicity chants and remembers the holy name of Krishna, then real intelligence awakens in this way. Oops, this isn't Prabhupada's purport. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing. One thinks, I am a spiritual particle, servant of Krishna. Krishna is my eternal Lord. Surrendering to Krishna's lotus feet is my eternal nature. This world is like a traveler's rest house. I think that means like an outhouse, like a toilet room. And to be attached to anything of this world will not give me eternal happiness. So, a detachment from the worldly and attachment to Krishna. What's the worst kind of prayasa? Someone mentioned it. Here's what Sanatana Goswami states in his Hari Bhakti Vilas. Sarva tyagipi aheyaya sarva narta bhuvashchate. Anyway, even if one can give up all material desires, the desire for fame, it's very difficult to give up. This desire for fame, which is compared to stool, is the root cause of all anartas. Therefore, one should carefully avoid touching this stool-like desire for fame. That's pretty clear. Pretty graphic also. So endeavoring, sometimes persons endeavor for that subtle thing, not just getting a job done or getting the fruit of that job getting done, but the recognition that will come from others for having done so. And it's bad. So, talking unnecessarily, prajalpa. Any talk unfavorable to Krishna's service is prajalpa, and that should be avoided. And so categories that Prabhupada mentions, being interested in mundane news and political affairs and crossword puzzles and all kinds of things that people do on airplanes all the time, playing cards, fishing. He mentioned these specifically in his purport of text 2. And we're going to hear a little comment Prabhupada making about political affairs. Very, very, very prominent in Indian newspapers. What's going on in the politics today? So, useless talk, arguments, gossip, debate, fault-finding, blaspheming devotees, something that doesn't lead one to Krishna. It leads down. I'll just read this. This is a lecture of Srila Prabhupada, 1974. Prajalpa means talking all nonsense. Suppose politics. What Mr. Nixon did yesterday, or what did he say? So, what interest we have got in Mr. Nixon? We shall not waste our time in talking this politics, that politics, this sociology, this cinema, this affair. No. We have nothing to do with that. That is called prajalpa, unnecessary talking. Talking means decreasing your duration of life, talking. So why should you decrease your life unnecessarily? Every moment you should have to utilize, whether it is used for Krishna. This is sadhana. This is sadhana, practice. Unnecessary talking, unnecessary making enemies, unnecessarily, you are my subordinate, I am your master. Who is master? Everyone is subordinate to Krishna. Nobody is master. Why you talk unnecessarily? Very strong. It's one of the symptoms, the flip side is one of the symptoms of bhava, is one is very, very careful to use every moment in Krishna's service. Remember one letter, it was 1971, something like that. Our head pujari, young devotee, is Rukmini, Prabhupada disciple Rukmini. She became a devotee when she was 16 or 17. So she could have been maybe 20 years old. She was a head pujari for Radha Govinda, and Prabhupada wrote a letter. She wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying she just, you know, she wished she had more time to use in serving Radha Govinda, and it's so important, and things like that. Prabhupada wrote back saying, it's very nice to see that you've achieved the bhava stage. That you're so concerned that every moment should be used in Krishna's service. Very generous statement by Srila Prabhupada. But the indication is time is something not to be wasted. Time is something that's very precious, that's to be used properly. So prajalpa is just time. So all these other things are just time wasters. On and on and on and on and on and on. Time wasting. And it just makes the brain mush. Anyway, that little, so many, I'll take a little jab at the time wasting things that young people do today with video games and all that kind of stuff. It just makes the mind a marshmallow. And time wasting. On the flight from Chicago, coming to here, there was this man in a suit, and he was sitting there playing one of those things. You know, till they ordered him, you got to shut it down. The plane's going to take off. And as soon as the plane landed, he had the thing out and he was playing it again. They're addictive. They're just, you know, there he is in his business suit, addicted to mind-numbing, time-wasting. In this category, it's prajalpa. I mean, it's prajalpa. It's explicit. Shadbir bhaktir vinashati. It destroys bhakti. So, not just, you know, kids have their version, adults have their version of time-wasting things. Be very careful in this regard. Not just speaking gossipy things, but time-wasting things. What are some good means to avoid prajalpa? Here's a nice verse. In order to pass one's life without sin, one should not speak anything more than whatever little is necessary. One need discuss only whatever is auspicious for oneself and others. If one wants to discuss topics of others, it will simply be useless speech. Therefore, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava, whoever indulges in praising or criticizing the qualities and behavior of others will quickly become deviated from his own best interest by his entanglement in illusory dualities. This doesn't mean we shouldn't speak nice things to devotees. Oh, you cooked a nice feast, or the deities were dressed very nicely today, or the kirtan was... It doesn't mean we shouldn't recognize and honor a devotee. It just means, you know, for mundane flattery, praising, criticizing kind of thing. Last slide, I think. Do any of these poisons cause obstacles in your life ever? These atyahara, prayasascha, or prajalpa? When and where do you encounter these poisons? I'm going to begin this with tomorrow, so you don't have to answer right now. You can think about it. In other words, the practical application is one thing, that there's something academic. Oh, I learned 3 new words in Sanskrit today. But apply it in a practical way. Are these things that come into your life, sneak in and steal away the spirit of bhakti because of indulging in time-wasting activity or over-endeavoring for something mundane, etc.? Do we sometimes justify getting some things as our service to Krishna, but in reality they are for our sense gratification? This is a question that's just the self-honesty question. Like, how can we tell when something is done for Krishna and something is done for me? So we discuss this a little bit. And that's the end. But that's just the first 3. And so, where's Lal Gopal? Somewhere back there. Is that, well, it's just, tomorrow is going to be continuation, part 2 of this verse. Yes?
What time in the morning?
I don't know. Who's got the schedule?
77.
Not here, somewhere in the suburbs.
Oh, I won't have them
to. Okay. Just come on over at the time we're going. You got a ride. See what happens. Any question or comment? Yes?
What is your view of, let's say, Vaishnavas who get involved in political campaigns or putting campaign bumper stickers on their cars and that sort of thing? I've seen it. It's not common, but I have seen it.
You want a soft answer or a hard answer? Well, you know, if there was a person worth voting for, you know, there would be some reason to put a bumper sticker. But in Prabhupada's explanation, repeatedly, where is the quality? Not just fearlessness based on foolishness, but fearlessness based on being a rajarshi. You know, a learned rishi that's a leader. That's something we might want to put on a bumper sticker. Or put a bumper sticker on a car, you know. Follow the rajarshi. That's my comment.
Okay. What is transcendental?
What's transcendental? Means beyond the modes of nature. Beyond the modes of nature. The modes of nature are governing everything on this plane. And there's another plane, another realm that's beyond the modes of nature. So our consciousness can be beyond the modes of nature. And if our consciousness is beyond the modes of nature, then our activities, even though we're performing them on this plane, they're elevated to a karma-free position or transcendental position. No contact with the modes of nature. No contact with karma. These two things, guna and karma. Guna means material qualities, modes of nature, and karma. You know what karma means. Yeah. So transcendental means no more karma, no more influence of the pushings of the modes of nature on another realm. So one who's a transcendentalist, they may be moving about this world. Their consciousness is otherworldly, and consequently they're not generating karma. There's no bondage to their work, and their actions are uplifting whoever they come in contact with. That's what being a transcendentalist does for others. Their speech, their work, their everything. there are social interactions. It's elevating for others and not binding for them. Yeah.
What's
Sanatana? Sanatan? Yeah. Sanatana is a Sanskrit word that means eternal. Sanatana means eternal. So like the soul is eternal. The soul is eternal. It doesn't come into being. There's not more souls in the future. They're going to come into being. They won't go out of being. They're eternal. That's Sanatana. The Jayate Namriyate Vakadachin. It's Sanatana, eternal. And Sanatana Dharma means, what do souls do? What's the natural, constitutional essence of what souls do? That's what Sanatana Dharma is. That's what Sanatana Dharma is.
So it should be this day from this day. It's supposed to be every day festival, right?
Yeah. But, well, festival in the sense that we're celebrating our connection with the Supreme. And that's a celebration. That's a cause of celebration. And then there are Maha Utsavas, big festivals, where we come together and we all celebrate together something, like Maha Mahotsava, big festival on Janmashtami.
Is today a big festival?
It's a medium festival. I'm enjoying being in the company of all the devotees, so that in that sense it's a nice festival. But when we, let's say, you weren't, because, well, on Saturday, this past Saturday, we had some nice, Mahatma Gandhi Center and out in the suburbs, and that was a big festival.
Nobody had a big festival today.
Okay. We're getting there. Yes?
When you talk about this prayasa, what we do as household, you are going to talk about that tomorrow. What we do as householders, is that prayasa
no.
in the right direction?
Well, let's say you're a good regulated householder. The answer is no. It's not over-endeavor for mundane things. If, however, you know, there's some spirit inside that says, "Ooh, look at that corporate ladder, yummy. Let me, you know, keep climbing, and I'll get more money." And then, you know, something in the back says, "Then I could give more money to the temple." But the real thing is, so I can climb that corporate ladder and I can have some sense of achievement, accomplishment. And I did, yay, look at me. That's over-endeavor. But if, you know, as your duty as a householder requires, you're performing your duty in your occupational work, and that you're vigilant that fruit which comes is Krishna's and is to be used in service to Krishna, part of which is taking care of my mortgage and taking care of my utilities bill, because I use those things in Krishna service, and my car payment, insurance, and taxes, and I want to make sure that I'm using a significant part directly in Krishna's worship and distributing knowledge and training and education, spiritual. So then that's not
Yes. Maharaj, like when we were watching that slide, we have this icon, like news and all those fall under the category of Prajapati. So when we watch news or when we hear news, like it has pieces of information we need to know, but at the same time not 100% is the information part. Like most of it is like unwanted stuff.
Most of it is unwanted. Most part, largely. I don't know, you know, what percentage. Largely. 99.8%.
I understand that part is the gentle mother.
But
there are pieces of information we might need to know. So if we ignore that as the gentle, how would we stay connected with the world around us?
Yeah, you know, I guess each of us has. Supposing it was your service. Supposing your occupation was something in relation to news and media or writing or. No, that would be a different level. So this is. Anasaktasya vishayan yat tarham upayunjitaha, as is appropriate or, you know. Suitable, according to suitability. That's Rupa Goswami. So it may be suitable for one person to, let's say someone's the communications director for the temple or for something, for ISKCON or something. It's more suitable that person is really tuned in. And the way that they look at that and, you know, the protection that they have because it is their service and how they utilize that which is coming in and how they filter out other stuff, they're protected because it's service. So that's a suitability example. Now, in your case or my case, that's not what our service is, but supposing there's something... trying to think of some examples. I feel here's what I do from time to time. I don't watch the news, but from time to time I'll go to some one or two, sometimes three different, like New York Times and BBC, and just take the headline to see what's going on out there. And it's basically the same stuff over and over again. You know, politics and sports and who did it to whom, you know, and somebody got slapped around, somebody cheated, and somebody did some skullduggery. And then, you know, they're embarrassed because they had to step down. You know, it's like kind of those kind of things. So, but are there trends, at least from my position, are there trends? Are there trends in, you know, whatever it is. I don't do that so much. I find just there are certain people, like, you know, our communications minister, he's in touch with those trends. They just say, hey, what's the latest trend? But, you know, what are the things that I should be aware of? And it gives me a down dump, and that's it. That's all I need. Because he's got that service. But, you know, so for you, as a housewife and a mother, I don't know. You need to know what the weather is, but you can get the weather without going to the news. You know, and do you have to send your children with an umbrella today to school, or you know, is it going to be cold out or something? And, you know, so you give them a jacket or whatever. But ask yourself a number of times before you just go. And do I really need this for my service? And if it's largely no and some little portion that's yes, do without it. And ask somebody that's it's their service. You know, whatever that particular thing might be. I don't know what that particular thing might be. what's going on with immigration policy and, you know, by our visa status and what's happening. Or, but you know, somebody that knows those things. Whatever, find somebody that knows those things. The numbing and distracting influence, media is very powerful. And, you know, it just takes your intelligence and throws it in the wrong place. Quickly. Very. Hang on. So this is, 'cause the question you're asking, it's brave and bold of you to ask it, because but it applies to everybody that has such. I mean, one of the biggest time wasters for people that know how to use technology is the internet and just surfing. You know, and like one devotee says, you know, I don't really like my work. And, you know, so I spend probably an hour to an hour and a half, sometimes even two, just reading news. And I'm careful to not, you know, go to the garbage section of the news. But, you know, unspoken part is, I know there's always the garbage section of the news. And, you know, one garbage leads to the next garbage. And it's daily. It's just a time waster, you know, reading the news. Doesn't need it for his service. It's a time waster. It's a time waster. So ask yourself seriously: Do I really need this for my wife, as duty as a wife and a mother and a citizen? Do I need this? If I spent that same amount of time reading a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam and did that every day for the rest of my life, what would that be like compared to watching the news? It's easy, you know. I'll go for that one. But so the problem is not so much I need it for my service. It's habit. It's habitual time wasting. And it's, you know, it's not disgusting. It's not something disgusting. You can name some disgusting thing. That's not one of those. It's not so harmful. In moderation. And it holds one's consciousness down. Bhakti doesn't rise. So where do I want to be in the mature stage of my life? Do I want to be covered as I am now, or do I want to be? We make choices. If you need it, go ahead. Do you need it? Then fill that space with, consciously, fill that space with something else. That same energy that, because it's a habit, says, oh, a little bit. Immediately take that energy and direct it elsewhere. And just keep doing it. You heard the example last night. Visual examples help me a lot. Here's some water that's moving, spreading across the floor. Or the ground. Make a little line and just the water starts going in that other direction. Because here it comes, it's going to go somewhere. Take it over that way. Take that urge and take it to something else. Something that's elevating. That you know is wholesome, and Guru and Krishna standing on either side of you just beamingly smiling. Yay! Very good. And then just keep doing that. And then you replace that habit with this other habit. And off you go, heading towards Krishna. That's the Tattva Shakti message. We make choices. We're marginal potency.
Now to ask you, when she said her question, I'm like, who do you know to ask? You know what I'm saying?
She knows who to ask.
No, I'm saying, I don't know sometimes. That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
Ask Rupa.
Honestly.
Okay. He'll give it to you straight. nicely, but he'll let you, you know, bang you on the side of the head if you need it. Someone else? Yes.
I already forget which slide was showing that the desire for fame was. What category was that under?
Prayasa.
So is that a function of the false ego? Or is that, I mean, that's not coming from the soul itself.
It certainly isn't. Yep, you got it, our dear friend, false ego. With a big assist from the mind. Yes, would you?
There was a slide which was telling about bhukti kamas, mukti kamas,
yeah.
Siddhi kamas. What
yeah.
is that?
Bhukti is sense gratification. Mukti, liberation. Siddhi, mystic perfections. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakali, ashanta. So the desire for sense gratification, the desire for liberation, the desire for mystic cities, and the endeavor connected to fulfilling those desires. That's the wrong kind of endeavor. Prayasa. Something else? Yes.
But for example, you mentioned about different things. As a father, when I'm taking care of my son.
Yeah, I noticed. And he's taking care of you. Keeping you very busy.
In order to sometimes keep him engaged in certain activity, you want him to do the eating or something else. You have to kind of talk some mundane things that he likes, just to keep him focused on something that, otherwise he's just running around and not concentrating on
it. I noticed he runs around.
So is that also considered prajapa?
Parents can't get a concession. Especially parents of prahlad. But you have to be very careful, because that leads to other things, lead to other things. You know, that becomes the standard. So impressions that are formed when a child is very young are lasting impressions. So it's my hat is off to you. I mean, you know, you have a challenging situation. It's not an easy situation. Your son has a particular nature, and he's so some discipline, but you know, like when you had to pick him up, you didn't want to pick him up because you knew what he would do, and he did it. Started hitting you and screaming, but you know, but at some point, discipline is required, and some lines are crossed. So then how to induce to the good, you know, some encouragement. But, you know, you have to go to the level of the individual, and he can't understand all things. So some things he can't understand, and you know, it's obvious there's some challenge, it's obvious there's some reciprocation, and you have to stay in that zone where, you know, he's feeling energetically or empathetically from your side as parents, there's love. And so there's some give and take, and his needs are way down here. And you're extending, but you're also inviting him to come to another position. And he'll go if there's a position of love, and he won't go if it's force. No way. Not him. So it's delicate. But so, yes, but in a measured way, be very careful. Because one thing leads to the next thing, leads to the next thing. Last question.
Is there anything we can do to erase the stored impressions of persons?
Erase what?
The stored impressions.
Sure. Krishna impressions. Yes. By bhakti. Bhakti has that potency, not only to erase the stored impressions, but to dissolve the material mind. Whew, what a relief. Then that means that the mind becomes fully spiritualized. And that's the potency. So the potency isn't gradual. Our capacity to receive is gradual. We're quite covered, in other words. So it works gradually because of our limitations, not bhakti's limitations. But yes, bhakti can completely eradicate all those impressions. Even the residual lingering tendencies because those impressions were there. That's the potency of bhakti. And the other processes do not have that potency. The prayaschitta process doesn't, it can remove the impression, but it doesn't remove the tendency to do again. And again, similarly. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.